offering our most loving pranams at Bhagwan's lotus feet. Dear listeners, we welcome you to this week's episode of Afternoon Satsang. As always, this is Prem and with me is Arvind, and we are joining you live from our studios at Prashanthi Nilayam. We are here to continue with our satsang on the conversations of Bhagwan Sri Sathya Sai Baba, a book documented by Hislop. In the course of this discussion, we are in the part where Swami speaks about light meditation, or Jyotir Dhyana as it is known. That concept is going to continue, but even as we go through what Swami is saying here, there's something very beautiful. The underlying theme, which is going to continue even today, is Swami is saying that, you know, here you are in this journey, and there is a goal that you wish to reach, and Swami is standing beside you, and Swami is giving you instructions, and Swami is stating that that is all that you need. It doesn't matter what are the obstacles on the path. It doesn't matter whether you have the abilities and capabilities. It doesn't matter how long the journey is. As long as you have Swami by your side, as long as you are able to just listen to what Swami says, obey it as diligently as possible, there is nothing more to worry, right? That is one thing that Swami is constantly saying for whatever kind of questions that are raised to Swami about Kundalini Yoga, about the different techniques of meditation. Swami says, why do you have to bother about all of that? If you have faith, if you have love for Swami, that is all that is required. And I think that is a message which is relevant for all times, whether we are talking about meditation or whatever it is. So before we go into what Swami has to say today, I think much of it is going to be about meditation. Let's invite Arvind to join all of us. Sairam Arvind.
Sairam Prem and Sairam to all our listeners. It has been interesting discussion on meditation from the past two sessions, and as Prem said, we'll be continuing with that today as well. Just to go to the point where we stopped last week, that was about the breathing rate, you know, 21,600 breaths per day. And Swami said that that is the average that is taken, because at times of exertion or stress, the breathing will be faster, while it will be slower during times of peace and quiet. So on an average, that is it. And the slower the breathing, the longer the lifespan. That was a thought with which we concluded. And I think we received an interesting question asking about exercising, sports and games. These are times when we are physically exerting, and therefore we tend to breathe more. So going by the statement that larger number of breaths reduces the lifespan, it was asked whether sports and games could possibly in that sense be considered as unhealthy for our lifespan. The very fact that Swami has encouraged a physical culture of sports and games in all his educational and all institutions, in fact, it's mandatory. We are even graded according to that. Our ultimate grade depends on how diligent and sincere and regular we are in these outdoor activities, yoga, sports, games. So intuitively, that itself shows that sports and games is not bad, though we tend to breathe more than usual during sports and games. So thinking about it, one possible explanation is that, you know, they often say in the olden times when they used to cut wood, they would tell the wood cutters that you should, as you're chopping the wood, take some time out to sharpen the axe,
right,
the instrument with which you are cutting the wood, because it gets blunt. And in the hurry to finish within a stipulated time, if you go on, the quality of your work reduces so much, so drastically, that you'll still not be completing the work, the quota that is supposed to be done. It would be better that you take a break, spend some time to sharpen the saw, and once it is sharp, continue with the job. The time lost in that much period when you're sharpening the saw is more than covered up by the increase in the cutting rate or the chopping rate. Similarly, you know, it can be thought in this manner that when we participate in these sports and games and other physical activities, there are so many benefits that they bring about. You know, they ensure that you sleep better at night. They reduce your stress levels. They have been known to do that. They ensure that you have a calm mind. They help you develop greater focus so that your later meditation becomes better. So in a sense, if we see the positives that these sports and games bring about through reduced stress, better rest, a calm mind, and increased focus during meditation, all these ensures that we are reducing the number of breaths we take. So it is most likely that the benefits far outweigh the extra breath that we take during sports and games. And therefore, in the long run, if we see sports, games and physical activity, a culture of yoga, all of these definitely lead to an enhancement of lifespan, because the net effect of the positives outweigh and outnumber the net effect of the negatives, and therefore it is encouraged. Of course, even this must be done within limits. It is not as if you spend 6 hours a day playing, because as Swami beautifully puts it, man is limited company. Everything must be done within limits. Within limits, everything is good. Beyond the limits, everything becomes bad. I think we had a satsang on that as well. What is good and what is bad? Anything within limits is good. Beyond the limits, anything becomes bad. Same applies to exercise too. So therefore, I just thought we should make a point and say that because the slower we breathe, the longer we can live, doesn't mean we give up on physical culture, yoga, sports, games, and the like.
Right. In fact, even as you're saying about maintaining it within the limits, if I'm not wrong, it's in Swami's Jnanavahini where Swami makes this point,
mm-hmm.
where when he's talking about a sadhaka, Swami says, extremes are very bad for sadhaka. In fact, that is the conclusion that Gautama Buddha comes to at the end of his austerities. And that's why he says the middle path is the most beneficial for a sadhaka. There Swami says, you know, too much of walking is bad, too much of sleeping is bad, too much of keeping awake is bad.
Mm-hmm.
No, it's not that every austerity should be like a tapas, which is done in an extreme sense. And adding to what you were saying about, you know, the breathing when that happens during sports, and I'm sure we must have made a reference to this talk even before. When Swami is talking about more breaths leads to a lesser lifespan, what Swami is clearly referring to is the state of stress. That when you're stressed out, when your mind is preoccupied with fear, preoccupied with things which endanger you literally in that sense, and we've spoken about the effects of stress on the physiology of the body itself and of the mind, and how stress completely changes the way your body functions.
Mm.
You know, it kind of starts to prioritize what is important at that moment, the fight or flight response of the body and all of that.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there's this very interesting talk, as I'm saying, we must have made a mention of it before, of a speaker by name Kelly McGonigal, right?
Mm.
She is a health psychiatrist. Right, so her job is to speak to people who are going through therapies, who are going through certain medications, and to help them, you know, in a psychological way, come to terms with whatever they're going through.
Mm-hmm.
It's required, especially for people going through dialysis or chemotherapy over a long period of time.
Mm-hmm.
So she said that I always would say that stress is a killer. Right, stress is very dangerous for you. Stress is very bad. And she said, for a good part of my career, I've been telling this to people. And then I come across the study which says that stress is not that which kills, but thinking that stress is bad kills. Right? So she says that, oh my God, I've been telling exactly that. I've been making people believe that stress is bad. Right? And so she goes on to explain that when you have stress, there is a certain mentality that is required. And that makes that stress beneficial. Right? Because she says that, you know, when you're writing an exam or you're in a very critical point, the body reacts in that way because that mechanism is necessary for that moment.
Mm.
So nothing that comes naturally is bad for you. We make it bad. Like, you know, even if you look at the current situation we are in, it's putting us through enormous stress. But if we are going to think that, oh, this is stressful, this is bad and this is not right, I'm not happy with what is going on, that's more dangerous for your mental health as well as for your physical health. But she goes on to say that, you know, I mean, she speaks of it from the medical point of view, where she says, you know, when you have stress, what are the hormones which are secreted? And when you have stress and when you have this belief that, no, I'm going through this for a certain reason and it is good for me, the kind of other hormones which are secreted and which balances out the negative impact of these stress hormones,
mm-hmm.
and how overall it leads to better health. Right? When you look at it that way, and when you look at something like sports, yes, there is stress, but the thrill that comes with sports, or the kind of other, when they say
positive.
That, you know, positives, endorphins get secreted when you're exercising, when you're doing a lot of physical activity.
Mm.
And there is no feeling of being endangered when you're in sports. There's always a, you know, the joy in it. There is excitement in it. And you know that it's a pastime. You're just doing it for, and that's why we use the word Leela. You know, this is just fun, and there is sometimes no reason behind why you're indulging in that. So with that emotion, I think overall the stress component is reduced. And as you rightly said, the net result of that is that your overall health improves. And the times when you're breathing less or breathing slower, the effect of that increases because of this few moments when you indulge in sports or activities like that.
Going ahead with that discussion, because that is where we had stopped last week. Hislop says, for us Westerners, is there something of the essence, some test that could be applied to action that would point out the correct dharma for any role in life? So basically he's asking for a thumb rule that shows them, especially to the Westerners, what is right and what is wrong. And Swami replies, there is not one dharma for Indians and another for Westerners. Dharma is universal. Yes, there is a test that may be applied to any action, and you may thereby determine if it is according to dharma. Let not that which you do harm or injure another. This flows from the recognition that the light, which is God, is the same in every form. And if you injure another, you are injuring the same light that is yourself. Dharma enables you to come to the recognition that anything that is bad for another form is also bad for you. The test for dharmic action is stated very clearly in the Christian religion. That is, do unto others as you would have them to do unto you. So, right in the beginning, Swami makes it very clear that there is nothing like a separate dharma for Indians, separate dharma for Westerners. In fact, in multiple discourses, Swami would emphasize and say there is nothing like a India dharma, Pakistan dharma, Germany dharma, Japan dharma. Just to say that dharma is universal. And then Swami says that there is a way to determine whether what you are doing is dharmic or not. And he says, you should not harm others. You should always try to help others. Help, ever, hurt, never. You know, it is said, Ashtadasha Puraneshu Vyasasya Vachanadvayam, meaning among the 18 Puranas, Vyasa has only two statements to make, and that is, Paropakaraya Punyaya Papaya Parapidanam, meaning it is merit to help others, and it is a sin to put others into trouble. That's all it is. Help, ever, hurt, never. That is the essence of all the 18 Puranas. And that is what Swami is saying here. That is the thumb rule as well. Whatever I'm doing, is it helping others? In fact, Swami goes on to say even that even if you can't help others, at least ensure that you're not hurting others. And when we say help or hurt, it is not just at the level of the action. I'm sure it's also at the level of the thought, level of the word.
Right, and just like that shloka of Vyasa that you quoted, the other thing, the other statement that Swami often makes in his discourse is Ahimsa Paramo Dharma. He says not to harm another being is the fundamental dharma. It's very interesting. If I'm not wrong, it was a conversation that Professor Venkatraman had with Justice Venkatachalaya, who was the former chancellor of our university. And of course, who was the former Chief Justice of India. And in the conversation they had about jurisprudence and how each country comes up with its laws. And if you study that, they say that the fundamental idea is you should not harm another person. And that is the basis with which you start. And then every law actually builds on top of that. Are there some cases where you're allowed to harm another person physically? Where cases of, where restraining one person leads to the benefit of so many other people. When you talk about, justice against a criminal, for instance. So, but the basis of all that is every time you come back to this, are you harming more people than you are benefiting more people? Is it harming the society? Is it harming the citizens? So, this is the fundamental idea of all legality also. That is your action harming another person or benefiting another person? And it's so beautifully captured in that Vyasa Shloka. He says, I've read all the 18 Puranas, but this is the final thing. You will again come back to this. This is the touchstone that you have to keep coming back to. Dharma gets complicated when time to time. In fact, Swami's whole Dharma Vaini is about that. Where in spite of all complexities, how do you ensure that you're always practicing Dharma? But the fundamental is always this. Don't harm another person. Don't hurt another person.
And then Hislop now asks another question, and I think this question possibly comes from the fact that I think Hislop was the world president, or at least the America country right. president, or right. something like that. He had a he was an office bearer, and that's why he asks, people have their previous meditations prior to coming to a Satya Sai Baba center. How should they now evaluate their present meditation procedure? So there are people who have learnt different kinds of meditation, and here is Swami who has emphasized and stressed only on the Jyoti meditation, and in that also Swami says one particular kind of Jyoti meditation, wherein he says, no, take the form of the light, don't do away with the form. And we went through all of that. Now before Swami can even answer, Swami is just silent, and the interpreter who has been interpreting so far, who has been translating so far, I'm sure he also has been a recipient of Bhagwan's discourse. So he says, this question is answered by Swami's description of genuine meditation. If the meditation engaged in by the new member of the center falls short of that, then he may consider following Swami's guidance in the matter. And Swami is silent, almost as if, you know, like approving that statement that is made. That is, if the person who is doing the meditation is experiencing all the things that Swami has said that a meditation is supposed to bring about, then it's okay. But if he is not, he can consider this. You know, when I read this, I just feel to a certain extent, again, we had made this point even last week, that you need that firm faith to go ahead, you know. After Swami tells everything, if you say, okay Swami, all this is there, but what if this is already there? If there is absolute faith that Swami is the supreme and what he gives is perfect, we just accept it. Means if at all something was more useful or something was more beneficial, Swami would have naturally mentioned it. The very fact that he has not mentioned it means I need not consider it. So it stems from that conviction. And before we even start following Swami, I think we should also start focusing on building our conviction in Swami, reminding ourselves who Swami is. Because if that is questioned, then everything else gets questioned. Because the fundamental basis for all our acceptance of Swami's teachings is Swami is the Supreme Godhead. And then with that faith we follow it, and then our experience only reaffirms the faith. But if that faith is not there to start off with, even though you may say that, you know, I won't have faith in Swami, but I will do what he's saying, and then I will see. If it works out fine, I'll develop faith. I don't think it works that way, because for even the practice to happen, that faith is essential. Having complete, you know, I was listening to a discourse the other day in that Swami says, when you go to the market, you have the confidence that without suffering an accident, you're going to come back home. Mm-hmm. With that confidence, you go to the market. You have that faith. What is the guarantee? Aren't there people dying? Yes, but you have that faith. It may so happen that when you go and that day, you may actually meet with an accident. But still, it doesn't shake your faith. You may come back, you'll get healed, you'll put on the plasters, and once your leg heals or your hand heals, again you'll go out surely for shopping with the same faith that nothing is going to happen. So, you know, when we are able to have faith in such small, small things in life, Swami says that you should have faith. Faith is absolutely essential. And, you know, as an example, I remember an episode that I had read somewhere about a person asking Swami Vivekananda whether there is any hope of redemption for him. And he asked like this because he has been a drunkard all his life. He has indulged in bad habits and bad circumstances. Then, you know, Swami Vivekananda tells him that you are feeling repentant, no? Repent for it and change. He says, yes, but the amount of bad I have done, I don't know whether all those sins can ever be gone in this lifetime. I don't think I have hope for redemption. Then Swami Vivekananda asks him, have you any time seen Ramakrishna Paramahamsa? And he says, I think once while I was passing by from a distance, I saw Swami Ramakrishna Paramahamsa. Then Vivekananda tells him, don't worry my fellow, your life is redeemed. You have seen Swami, Ramakrishna Paramahamsa, what else you need? You know, while this episode is often quoted as the power of Ramakrishna Paramahamsa, I also feel this is the faith of Swami Vivekananda. Right. His faith was such, and it works. In the same way, the importance of faith is so highlighted over here, because without that faith, if we even practice to the hilt what Swami has said, it will not be that effective, because it is the faith that lends power to the practice that we do.
though the conversation here is about meditation and Swami is saying it here, it's so true about everything that Swami says. Everything that Swami has told in his discourses, we are supposed to be following it, right? When we say that we are devotees of Swami, we're supposed to be following it. It is, what stops us from doing that are these two things. One is the lack of faith, and the other is the lack of control over ourselves, right? And Swami says that this is how meditation has to be done, and if he says that 5 minutes every day you have to sit without any thoughts and doing only this meditation, it's not possible for me, not because I don't have faith, it's because I don't have control over my body and my mind. And I would love to do that, but I can't do that because I don't have control. So these are two things which are very important, that you have to have control, that is what we are trying to achieve, and it's about faith. So as Swami clearly says that without that faith, it doesn't, nothing works. And the thing is, the Swami gives this very beautiful analogy about bhakti, marga, jnana and karma, as we've quoted once. Swami talks about the different kinds of train journeys that one can make. That, if you want to go from here to Delhi, Swami would say that, you want to reach there and you're looking at which is the easiest way to get there. So there are a lot of people who do this, the train hopping, right? They'll say that which is the shortest route. I can get down at the middle of the night at this particular place, then catch this train, which will stop at this obscure station, and then you can catch another train. It's quite complicated, but some people get the thrill out of that, you get there in the shortest distance. And Swami would say there are some others who probably, take a shorter, go from one place to, say, A to B and B to C, and they finally reach there. And Swami would say there are some people who will just get into one train and they will not bother about, where is this stopping, where if you get off. Swami would say sometimes the coach will be detached and will be attached to a different engine. You're simply sitting in the same place. You're not worried about, coming out of the train and again boarding a train, or when is the other train coming. You're not bothered about that. So Swami would say the third is the way of bhakti, where you have got into the train, you've bought the ticket, and then you just relax. If there is a change required, that will be done automatically. If there's some place where you have to, the train has to reverse or the train has to turn around, everything is taken care of. You don't have to worry. I think what Swami is telling here is like that. See, this is the technique I am teaching you. That restlessness sometimes comes because we want to get ahead of others. We want to, we want to achieve more than what we've achieved so far. All that restlessness comes because of this. So Swami is saying that this is the royal technique. I am teaching you this. But at the same time, even in whatever we have read so far, there is no force from Swami. Swami never said that if you don't do this, you will not achieve the goal. I think that statement Swami has never made, and that is not in Swami's nature. Swami never would say that if you don't join the Satyasai organization, there is no redemption for you. That is not the tone of Sanatan Dharma, and that is not the tone of Swami also. And that's why Swami is saying, this is the royal road. This is the thorough ticket, through ticket I'm giving you. You just get in there, sit in the coach, you will reach the destination. But if you're restless and you want to get on midway and catch another train, you're free to do that. But this is the easy one I'm giving you.
On that note, dear listeners, we'll take a quick little break. And on the other side of the break, we will continue, because Swami asks the same group of Westerners, any doubts or questions, spiritual questions only, and then many questions related to meditation come up, and Swami answers them beautifully as always. All that after this little break.
ఎంత భాగ్యమో ఎంతటి సౌభాగ్యమో ఎంత భాగ్యమో ఎంతటి సౌభాగ్యమో భగవానుడు మన కోసం దిగి వచ్చాడు భగవానుడు మన కోసం దిగి వచ్చాడు భువిని సత్య సాయిగా నిలిచాడు భువన చక్రవర్తిగా నిలిచాడు భువిని సత్య సాయిగా వెలిశాడు
భువన చక్రవర్తిగా నిలిచాడు. ఎంత భాగ్యమో, ఎంతటి సౌభాగ్యమో, ఎంత భాగ్యమో, ఎంతటి సౌభాగ్యమో. రామకథను విన్నాము, రాముని ధ్యానించాము, రామకథను విన్నాము, రాముని ధ్యానించాము, రామా రామా శ్రీరామాని ఆర్తితో విలపించాము, రామా శ్రీరామాని ఆర్తితో విలపించాము. ధర్మమూర్తి శ్రీరాముడు దయచూపాడు, ధర్మమూర్తి శ్రీరాముడు దయచూపాడు, భువిని సత్యసాయిగా వెలిశాడు, భువన చక్రవర్తిగా నిలిచాడు, భువిని సత్యసాయిగా వెలిశాడు, భువన చక్రవర్తిగా నిలిచాడు. ఎంత భాగ్యమో, ఎంతటి సౌభాగ్యమో, ఎంత భాగ్యమో, ఎంతటి సౌభాగ్యమో. గోపాలకృష్ణుని మా పాలిదేవుని, గోపాలకృష్ణుని మా పాలిదేవుని, కృష్ణ కృష్ణ శ్రీకృష్ణాని గొంతెత్తి పిలిచాము, కృష్ణ శ్రీకృష్ణాని గొంతెత్తి పిలిచాము. చల్లని మా నల్లనయ్య కరుణించాడు, చల్లని మా నల్లనయ్య కరుణించాడు, భువిని సత్యసాయిగా వెలిశాడు, భువన చక్రవర్తిగా నిలిచాడు, భువిని సత్యసాయిగా వెలిశాడు, భువన చక్రవర్తిగా నిలిచాడు. ఎంత భాగ్యమో, ఎంతటి సౌభాగ్యమో, ఎంత భాగ్యమో, ఎంతటి సౌభాగ్యమో. హృదయాంతరంగ సాయి శ్రీ సత్య సాయిని, హృదయాంతరంగ సాయి శ్రీ సత్య సాయిని, సాయి 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 శ్రీ సాయి అని భక్తితో ప్రార్థించాము, సాయి శ్రీ సాయి అని భక్తితో ప్రార్థించాము. వరదాభయ దివ్యమూర్తి వరమిచ్చాడు, వరదాభయ దివ్యమూర్తి వరమిచ్చాడు, కరుణారస దివ్య దృష్టి సారించాడు, ప్రేమామృత దివ్య వృష్టి కురిపించాడు, కరుణారస దివ్య దృష్టి సారించాడు, ప్రేమామృత దివ్య వృష్టి కురిపించాడు. ఎంత భాగ్యమో, ఎంతటి సౌభాగ్యమో, ఎంత భాగ్యమో, ఎంతటి సౌభాగ్యమో. భగవానుడు మన కోసం దిగి వచ్చాడు, భగవానుడు మన కోసం దిగి వచ్చాడు, భువిని సత్యసాయిగా వెలిశాడు, భువన చక్రవర్తిగా నిలిచాడు, భువిని సత్యసాయిగా వెలిశాడు, భువన చక్రవర్తిగా నిలిచాడు. ఎంత భాగ్యమో, ఎంతటి సౌభాగ్యమో, ఎంత భాగ్యమో, ఎంతటి సౌభాగ్యమో.
Welcome back, dear listeners. Going ahead in this conversation, this time Swami turns to the other devotees in the group and says, any doubts or questions? And this is directed to a group of Westerners, as His Love Himself notes in the book. And Swami immediately adds, spiritual questions only. Hmm. We know all kinds of personal questions might come. So Swami says, any doubts or questions? If there are any spiritual questions you might ask. And a visitor asked this question. He says, Swami, why a lamp in meditation? And Swami answers, why a light? From the sand if one takes, it will be depleted. From the water tank, if each one takes, the tank will go dry. But 1,000 people can take the flame of one candle to light their candles, and the flame is in no way diminished. Light a lamp or a candle. Gaze straight ahead at the flame. Then take the candle flame, the jyoti, into your heart and see it in the midst of the petals of the heart. Watch the petals of the heart unfold and see the light illumine the heart. Bad feelings cannot remain. Then move the flame to the hands and they can no longer do dark deeds. In turn, move the flame in like fashion to the eyes and ears, so they may henceforth take in only bright and pure sensations. Then move the light outwards and into your friends, relatives and enemies, and then into animals, birds and other objects, so that all are illumined by the same light. Christ said, all are one, be a light to everyone. In this way, you will no longer be limited to this body, but will expand throughout the universe. The world, which is now so big, will become very, very small. To expand beyond self and see that your light is the light of the universe is liberation. Liberation is not different from this. So this is the beautiful explanation that Swami gives why light, as we had mentioned, I think the last time. Swami explains why choose a light, why jyoti meditation. And this is something that Swami would often speak about, that there is a similarity between learning and lamp. You know, that's why we always associate wisdom with brightness, with light, or lamps with the idea of dispelling darkness. Swami would say this, that you can give your learning, but you will not, it'll not depreciate from, you know, what you have. In fact, it's the other way around. The more you give, the more you're able to explain to another person, the more you're able to share it with the other, your own understanding grows. So Swami would say that that is similar to the lamp, that you can take any number of, you can light any number of lamps from one lamp, and it'll only increase, it'll not decrease in that sense.
You know, actually, when you're, just like education, you said when you're lighting one lamp from the other lamp, when the two wicks come in contact, the flame actually becomes larger than the individual flame. So that happens, that kind of synergy happens even in the light. And after that, Swami gives a straightforward technique or the way it should be done. I mean, there's nothing to explain there. Swami says, look at the flame, take that flame, you know, look at it for some time so that it you're able to visualize it clearly. You know, when you focus and look at something for some time, after that, when you close your eyes also, you're able to see it. So when there's a lamp with everything else dark, very, very highly probable that that jyoti will imprint itself on the mind's eye. So once that is done, Swami says, close your eye and take the lamp, take that light to the center of your heart. Let your heart be a 1,000 petal lotus which opens up. Then take the light to all different parts of the body and illumine it so that none of those parts of the body do bad things because they've been illumined by the light of God. In fact, the previous week we were discussing how Swami said that along with the light, you can also visualize in the beginning the name and the form of the Lord that is dear to you. That is, in a way, a subconscious reminder that this is pure light. This is the light of divinity. This is the light that is positivity, because it's associated with the form of God that you love. So Swami explains that. Swami says, as we keep doing this, grow in our focus, grow in our concentration to contemplation and meditation, we finally achieve liberation, and there's no difference between liberation and this. Because, you know, when we say liberation, we are actually speaking about being liberated from the ego or body consciousness, where we talk of everything or we think of everything with respect to me being this body. When I'm able to speak about anything or think about anything from the perspective that, you know, I'm the universe in that sense, because every being or everything that I'm seeing around is pervaded by the same energy and the same divinity, then that is Atmabhimanam, as Swami would say. So, being freed from Dehabhimanam is only moksha. You know, Swami on various other occasions has also said that we often have a misunderstood idea of moksha, thinking that possibly a person will be levitating or a person will have a halo around the head or will be emanating some light. It's not like that. All those are only depictions. Depictions to show that this person is beyond the earth possibly. That's why maybe he's above the ground. This person is having wisdom. That's why the light around, the halo around. So all those are only depictions. It basically means that you don't perceive the world from the standpoint of you being the body, but you perceive the world from the standpoint of you being the same Atma or divinity that's present in everyone. So Swami says, even if this Jyoti meditation practice is done sincerely and correctly, over time, you will achieve liberation.
Right. And in fact, I think later there's going to be a discussion about, Hislop is going to ask for some clarity. But then I think it's a repetition of what Swami had said last week, the whole technique of how it has to be done. And there is an idea behind it. It's not to be mechanical. I think that's what Swami made it very clear last time. There is an idea behind it. You know, what do you mean by having a light? Light stands for purity, light stands for this, that, you know, the same lamp, the same light, the same flame can be in multiple flames. You know, as Swami would say, the lamps are many, but the flame is one. That is the idea that you're trying to visualize literally in your mind. So that is one thing that Swami says. And the other thing is about purifying each one of your limbs. Though you're not the body, you act through the body. And the idea is to purify the words that come out of you, the actions that come out of you, the kind of hearing that you indulge in, the kind of seeing that you indulge in. So that is the idea. So Swami would say that focus on that, concentrate on that. And later, of course, there's going to be a question on how do you come out of this meditation. We'll speak about that when we come there. But then after Swami says this, one of the visitors asks this question. To keep sitting straight is certainly not easy to do. Right, and quite appropriately captured. I think it's not easy to do, definitely.
And Swami responds, he says, to sit straight is important. Between the 9th and 12th vertebrae is the life force. I think this also Swami had said.
Mentioned it, right.
Mentioned in the previous
occasion. During the Kundalini discussion.
If the spine is injured at this point, paralysis occurs. If the body is in a straight position, as if it were wound around a straight pole, the life force may rise up through the straight body and give the quality of intense concentration to the mind. Moreover, just as a lightning rod attached to the roof of a building attracts lightning, in like fashion, a perfectly straight body provides a conductor, so to speak, for divine power to enter the temple of your body and give you the strength to accomplish your task and reach your goal. As another example, the divine power is always there, just as radio signals are here. But to hear the radio music, there must be an antenna. Further, if the tuning device is not properly adjusted, there will be no sound. There will be some sound, but no music. In like fashion, the divine power, which is always present, may flow into you if the meditation is correct and the body is straight. Well, I think that's straightforward. Mm-hmm. Swami says that your body has to be kept straight because it is the antenna which is receiving all the divine radiations. And Swami says that the meditation technique should be correct because that is the tuning mechanism through which you are able to tune into the right frequency. Once that is done, Swami says you will hear the music, and I think if we fail doing that, we will face the music.
And then the visitor, maybe the same visitor, who goes on to ask, how about the Brahma Muhurta meditation? And Swami replies, Brahma Muhurta means early morning, between 3 to 6 a.m. It means that the senses are quiet, not yet agitated by the day, and mind is quiet from sleep. But the hour should not be taken and changed around, taking one time today and another time tomorrow. A half hour in the morning and a half hour in the evening is enough for sitting meditation. If done all day long, it will lose its attraction after a couple of years. The spiritual practice should be varied for interests. Some bhajans, some repetition of name of the Lord, sometimes spent in the company of spiritual people, and so on. Just as in daily life, some variety makes the day interesting. That, I think, is a saving grace for most of us.
The variety that is given.
Swami says that, you know, it is natural that the mind craves for variety. Because many times, not all of us probably relate to sitting down in meditation. You know, sometimes it really helps. In fact, I was just thinking the other day we are speaking so much about this meditation, and I think it does call for a little bit of disclosure that not all of us practice meditation on a daily basis. But there was a time when Swami probably gave us that opportunity. You know, when you're sitting in Mandir waiting for Swami, we're sitting there for 3 hours, as we had discussed about this when we were talking about the hostel schedule. The rest of the day is so packed, and suddenly bang in the middle of that day, there is this 3 hour period where you're expected to sit down and do nothing. And that becomes a challenge. But in a way, when connecting back to what you were telling about the sports enabling you to have those periods when you're stress-free, you know, it enhances the experience of that time. I think something similar to that happened to us when we were sitting in that mandir for 3 hours. The way the day is packed, the rest of the day made that 3 hours so precious. You know, where you could sit there, and I think if we have practiced any meditation worth the salt, it was only during that time when we were literally waiting for Swami. Swami gave us the silence. Swami gave us the opportunity to sit down on the floor and sit straight, follow all of this. And that is the only time probably we had the opportunity to practice meditation. But otherwise, Swami gives us the opportunity to do all this. You know, as Swami is saying here, a little bit of bhajans, company of good people, which means satsang, listening to good things, listening to a good talk, probably listening to Swami's discourses. Definitely, we practice these kind of meditations, and it's very heartening that Swami is acknowledging that a little bit of variety is required in sadhana also.
One more interesting observation I just wanted to make is, when we try to go to sleep, for us to get a good sleep, two prerequisites are there. One is that we should be physically tired, and one, we should be mentally calm. If either doesn't happen, it becomes challenging. I mean, even though you're physically very tired, if your mind is running about 100 things that have to be completed before that is done, you keep awake. And that's what we see happening in stressful situations when there are deadlines, timelines. These deadlines are not good from a spiritual perspective at all, however lucrative they may appear and however it might make you look like a very successful person, because, you know, you're doing it everything within deadlines and timelines. I have at least come across 3-4 cases where people who are otherwise very healthy, I mean to say, they don't smoke, they don't drink alcohol, they have a good fitness regime, good habits, clean habits, nothing bad. Only fault is not getting enough sleep at night. Sleep less hours because work late in the night, get up early in the morning, again start working. And you're successful in the worldly sense also. There have been news articles of such people succumbing to heart attacks. Even recently during the corona lockdown, we had one such person from a very high placed and large IT company in India passed away because of a massive heart attack because of this, not because of anything else. So, coming back to the point, when you have to get a good sleep, body being tired is good, but mind being calm is more important. In fact, I have noticed the other things happen. When the mind is calm, even if the body is not tired, you just lull away into a sleep. You know, I had recently taken a few days off. It nicely coincided with the lockdown. So sitting at home, There's nothing to do. I would watch the Ramayana. Believe it or not, Prem, every day after watching the Ramayana, when you just sit and watch the whole story, and it's a beautiful story, positive things, at the end of it, I would feel so sleepy. And I got into a habit of pre-lunch nap for half an hour. And I'm sure we would have observed this happening even in Kulwant Hall, you know, where we would come, we would have darshan, the excitement of darshan, and then Swami goes off into the interview room. It may take an hour and a half. Though we are planning to study or do some things, slowly, many, many times we see people dozing. In fact, I remember on one occasion, we heard one loud gong in the mandir, dong, and everybody was wondering what happened. It was one of my classmates who lost posture while sitting because he was dozing, and his head went and gonged against that massive brass lion that was there, you know. So it came like that. So I just want to, you know, I'm stating this aside just to show that really, you know, it gets you to a kind of relaxed state. And it answers all the other things also, you know, about breathing and all that, because when you're sitting in mandir, when you're doing this, I think we often face this problem also that, you know, whenever I sit for meditation, I start feeling sleepy. While that is something that has to be overcome, that should not discourage us, because I really feel that is a step forward. The very fact that you're feeling sleepy shows that you're able to cut out all the exciting and energizing kind of thoughts, because and this happens when we are focusing on only one thing. It happens. So definitely sleeping during meditation, sleeping during bhajan is not recommended. It's something that is to be overcome. At the same time, if we feel drowsy or sleepy, we should not think that we are failing, we are miserable. No. In fact, it is a sign of we being very relaxed. And that is possibly the reason why we are getting yawns, why we are getting, you know, a kind of relaxation. I just wanted to make this point because I'm sure this is an experience many of us must have faced during our spiritual practices.
The other point that Swami is making about Brahma Muhurtam, the early morning, I recall I was listening to a talk by one of the monks from the Ramakrishna order. And he was saying that one of the things which is generally done, you know, they have a specific routine, regime when you kind of become a monk, you take up sannyasa, you work in one of the schools that they run for some time, and then you serve in the publication division for some time. They have a certain pattern, and one of the things is you go and do something like an internship in the Himalayas with some of the monks who are there. It's like the hardcore thing that you're supposed to do. You completely cut off from everything. And one of the things that the guru that he was assigned to, or the mentor that he was given to, did was he took him to one of the ghats where the Ganga flows. And at some of the places, the Ganga is very, very muddy. Right? When the plane is probably in the plains, where it's carried a lot of silt together. So the water actually looks brown with all that. It's gushing and it's brown in color. And the master took him to one particular place like that. And he said, see, this is Ganga. This, remember this site. And he said, the water is brown in color with all the mud. And then they trekked a little higher up, probably closer to the source of the river. And there, if you see, the water is white. And in fact, it's almost like greenish white. And green, not in the sense of the moss or anything like that, but it gives you a more pure feeling.
Sparkling.
Like sparkling white, blue and greenish, that kind of a color. And he said, see, it's the same Ganga, but see the color of the water. And what they say is, that is the mind of a samsari, or the mind of a person who is worldly. This should be the mind of a person who wants to be a yogi. Right? If you really look at it, it's the same river, but the river in the source is purer than the river in the middle, in the midstream. So when Swami says, when you wake up early in the morning, it's the same mind. The mind, if you catch it in the midday, it's going to be filled with all these thoughts, and because it's already open to all the inputs that are coming to from, you know, your work, your boss is telling you something, the task that you have at home and all of that. But early in the morning when you get up, it is like the river in its, you know, in its source. And Swami says that's the best time to catch it. And as Swami says, that you're going to do this technique so that it is going to have an influence on the rest of your day. So it is best to do it at that Brahma Muhurtam when the day starts.
Hislop then asks, Swami, how should the period of meditation on the Jyoti be brought to a close? And Swami had said it last time also. Swami repeats it. Swami says, first you are in the light, then the light is in you, Finally, you are the light and the light is everywhere. Enjoy for a while, then bring the light back to the heart and hold it there for all the day. The form of God may also be included, Krishna, Rama, Jesus, Sai, as you wish. The form of God selected may be seen in the center of the flame, wherever it is carried, and then you are with God everywhere. So, that is what Swami says.
Right. And in fact, that's what I was saying. I was listening to this discourse where Swami says, where Swami is talking about Jyoti meditation, in fact. One of the Samukos discourses where Swami gives, I mean, this, whatever Swami is saying here, Swami speaks about that in that discourse. At the end of it, Swami says, you know, this precise point, how do you wake up from or get up from a meditation? Because that's very important. Swami says people sit, do meditation for 20 minutes, and the first thing after they get up from meditation is shout at the maid in the house.
Mm.
Swami says, what is the whole, I mean, the whole point is lost.
Mm.
The idea is, as Swami is saying here, you kind of visualize that light inside you. You're visualizing the same light in everyone. How long can you carry that emotion? It might be for 1 hour into your day, it's all right. Tomorrow it could be 1 hour and 15 minutes. The whole idea is to, you know, to ensure that from one Jyoti meditation probably to the other Jyoti meditation, you're able to retain that emotion through the day. And that is what is what we're trying to achieve. So Swami is very beautifully saying here, when you get up from that Jyoti meditation, at least how long can you retain it? It's the same thing with everything. Even for darshan, Swami would say that. You know, when you get up from darshan, when you conclude, try to retain that silence for some time. Or bhajans, Swami would give this instruction to many of the samitis and centers around the world. Don't have socializing immediately after bhajans. Let people carry that vibration with them for some time. And these are all things that it's so practical. Swami is saying it's not like a ritual that Swami expects us to follow, or it's not like, you know, these are the mandates of the Satya Sai organization. It's simple things that Swami is saying in a very logical way.
On that note, dear listeners, we will take a quick little break again. And on the other side of the break, we will continue with this discussion. Welcome back, dear listeners. Continuing the conversation, a visitor now says, at the meeting it was mentioned that people doing other kinds of meditation should not join the Satya Sai Baba Center. I assume that this meeting is a meeting they had, not the meeting with Swami.
Right.
So he says that this is what has been said, that people doing other kinds of meditation should not join Satya Sai Baba Center. And Swami says, this yoga and that yoga is not the answer. Yes, they may join even if doing other meditations. Let all unite in the one goal. God is reached only through love. Pranayama subject the heart and lungs to strain and pressure. The health must be good. Bhakti yoga is best. A big mixture will only create confusion. The meditation on light is safe and sure and leads directly to the goal. You know, and then the visitor continues, but if one has been initiated into another meditation, Swami's book says it's a sin to change. Looks like he's trying to get Swami to say, no, it's not a sin, you can do what you want. It almost looks like that. Mm-hmm. Because I think so far what Swami has said, it makes it so clear. Swami is saying, this is the best, this is the safest, bhakti yoga is there. But Swami again lovingly answers, he says, the goal remains the same. There is just some change in the pathway or method employed. Meditation on light is real meditation. Light is formless, eternal, divine. It is a safe way and a sure way. But above all is love. Love is the royal highway of God, royal highway to God. God is love. At the beginning, we should carefully consider and investigate the meditation or sadhana that we propose to adopt. Who is the guru? What is the result? If then we have full confidence that it will take us to the spiritual goal, then go ahead and stay with it. But it is a spiritual goal that we aim for, not a physical goal, not a goal at a sensory level. In my humble opinion, Swami has made it very clear. Just follow the light meditation and have follow Jyoti meditation and have bhakti in the heart, it's enough. Finally, ni ishtam. You know, it is, I remember on 2-3 occasions, you know, when people are having a discussion with Swami, when if Swami concludes with a ni ishtam, the person is very agitated. Because, you know, it often happens that you're trying to talk with Swami and you're putting forth your ideas, your thoughts, and Swami is very, very liberal in that. He allows. But beyond a certain point, Swami is trying to say that this is the way, this is the best way. If you don't want to listen, Swami says, ni ishtam, it's almost like saying, fine, you're alone on it, you do what you want. And if God says that, doomed you are.
Right. And maybe this question that he's asking, Swami's book says it's a sin to change.
Mm.
Again, it's something that Swami says very generically. You know, Swami would tell about, you know, you don't start one technique today and then tomorrow something else comes in the market and you leave this and you go there. Swami would say in that sense, you know, don't keep changing your thing every now and then. So in that sense, Swami would say that it's not the right approach for spiritual sadhaka. And again, when this talk about in the meeting, it was said that the others, other practices, I think Swami made it very clear in one of the discussions that we went through that you don't make the Satya Sai organization as a vehicle for a new technique that you come up with or you believe in. You know, many times that happens. You know, the person who is in charge of one particular center, what he or she believes in, there is a little bit of thrust for that particular technique.
Mm.
So, you know, Swami says in that point of view, tomorrow if some person comes and says, you know, I've been practicing this meditation for so many years and I would like to teach this to the participants. In that sense, you know, you don't have to institutionalize another method of meditation when Swami very clearly says that this is the meditation that is the royal path. You know, many times it happens. The other day I had a visitor who was telling, Swami has so many centers around the world, so many people are there. I think we should teach Patanjali's Yoga Sutra, you know, through the Satya Sai organization. And I spoke to him for some time and I just understood that he has taken a fancy for that. Mm. I mean, there's nothing wrong with Patanjali's Yoga Sutra. Patanjali is a great sage and out of his experience and out of his wisdom, he has written something. So this person has taken a fancy for it and he has dedicated a good amount of his life in studying it and he wants to spread it. He probably has benefited from it and he wants to share that wisdom with others. But then that's what happens. You know, you want to use the center or the infrastructure here as a way to spread that. When you look at it from that point of view, that's why Swami never has used the words like it's a sin and it's going to it's not right, or it is, it'll lead you to perdition. There's nothing like that. Swami is saying, as you rightly said, you know, this is the path, and if you follow it, you're going to benefit. If you don't follow it, fine, you know, whatever you have faith in, you do that. I'm reminded of that beautiful episode that, you know, this Karunamma Ramamurthy's mother narrates. When they first come to Swami, the first fear that she has is, you know, I've already got a mantropadesh, I've already got a mantra from a guru. You know, what if Swami gives me a new mantra? And, you know, I should not be changing it. And it is said that you should not keep changing your mantra and all of that. So that is the first fear she has. So for the first few interactions, Swami doesn't, you know, mention anything. And Swami, in fact, says that, you know, you have already got a mantra, you can practice that. It's a good mantra and all of that, Swami says. And then, you know, after some time, that yearning that Swami should give some technique, or Swami should give some method which he can practice, you know, that yearning comes. And when that happens, Swami tells her, you know, that mantra that you're chanting, it's a good mantra, it's a very powerful mantra. Swami says, you can add Sai to that if you're interested. And she was so delighted that Swami was telling her that. The reason for that is, you know, it kind of enhances the meditation that she's already doing. Because here is a form, you know, as Swami so beautifully says, it all comes down to love. You know, with love you do it. And that same contemplation meditation becomes so much more easier when there is a name that you love, a form that you love. Similarly, you know, if at all anybody who is listening to this satsang tomorrow onwards says that I have to take up Jyoti meditation, that is out of love, right? Because you've kind of been introduced to the idea that Swami is telling you so much about Jyoti meditation. I love Swami and I want to follow Swami and I want to do that. And so Swami says, when it comes from love, it's fine. If you have been practicing some meditation for 20 years and after listening to this, you say, no, I want to take up this. If it is coming out of love, Swami is saying it is fine. If you want to change, it's fine. It is not like it's a sin to change. But let love be the basis of all that. Let that desire to reach Swami be the basis of all that. Nothing can go wrong with that.
Continuing, a visitor now asks, but how can I get that self-confidence that I do not have? I think it's a slightly tangential question, but it definitely is a question that must be bothering him or her a lot. So, therefore the question is, but how can I get that self-confidence that I do not have? And Swami says, to do bad things you have the self-confidence to go ahead. The same self-confidence is also there to do good things. Everyone has self-confidence. So many times it's like we are trying to look for an easy way out. I remember once, you know, when Swami used to give darshan in the car, I was feeling burdened with a lot of negative thoughts, bad thoughts. So when Swami came close, I just got up on my knees and to my surprise, Swami lowered the glass and it was totally unexpected. And Swami looked at me as if to ask what. So I said, Swami, please control my mind. That was what came. Then again, to my amazement, in Kannada, Swami spoke to me, which is my mother tongue, which had never happened many times. Swami said, your mind and you want Swami to control. So then I thought, oh, okay. I said, okay, Swami, just give me the strength to control it, Swami. Swami said, that I've already given. And in this time, the car moved on. And then I realized that, so finally, it's totally left to me to do it, because Swami says that you want me to control your mind. You are not able to control your own mind. You're trying to sublet it or give that work, outsource it to me. And then if you say, yeah, I want strength to do it, Swami says that I've already given. You're already having it. So it's time for you to start doing it. You're being lazy. I felt that was Swami's message to me. You're being lazy. You're trying to throw away your responsibilities. You're trying to get everything free at your doorstep. Put some effort and you'll be able to do it. So that's how it is. In fact, Swami used to narrate one Chinnakatha. It is there in that Chinnakatha book that I've read, where I'm saying that because I've not heard Swami narrate it, but I've read it, wherein this guru teaches his disciple, who is a simple farmer, that, you know, you pray to God, God will always help you. And his God of choice is Hanuman. And one night when it's raining and the road is slushy, his cart wheels get stuck in the mud and he starts praying to Hanuman, and at the end of half an hour he goes to his Guruji drenched and he says, for half an hour I've been praying, Hanuman has not come to help. Then the Guruji says that, you have been praying to Hanuman, but did you put some effort at least? He says, but I can't push the wheel out of the thing. He says, that irrespective of that, you have to put in your effort. And Swami concludes the story by saying that this farmer goes back and chanting Hanuman's name starts pushing at one wheel, and Swami writes that he could feel some strange power pushing, because with his efforts, the cart seemed to come out of the slush, which would otherwise not be possible. So Swami says that do your best and God will do the rest. You can't rest and tell God you do the best.
Right. And I think the question that this visitor is asking about, you know, how can I get that self-confidence? Mm. It's a subtle understanding of the visitor who's saying that, you know, that is what makes us change one path to the other. Right. And the moment we don't find any experience coming our way, or, you know, we've tried this out for 10 years, nothing's happening, that is when our self-confidence starts dwindling, and then you start looking at other options.
Mm.
So if you really have the self-confidence, you will not ask, you know, much of the questions that you ask. Swami, should I do this or should I do that? You know, a lot of us tend to do that. You know, we get an instruction from Swami, and after every now and then we want to, you know, make sure that, you know.
Correct, Swami. I'm doing that.
Should I continue to do this, or do you have any change of this one? Because that's a lack of self-confidence. And very beautifully Swami says, you know, even as you're narrating that episode that where Swami was saying, in a discourse, Swami says this. And he says, every individual born in the world has already been given the ability to reach the goal. Mm-hmm. So if you ever think that God has been partial with somebody and given him more ability or given her more focus than you, Swami says it's not true. Every individual has been given the same ability, because finally Swami says, you are as divine as I am. There is no difference in that. So the question of not having self-confidence is not there at all. It is only about unraveling the self-confidence, which of course is a different topic altogether. But Swami is saying very clearly that you already have the self-confidence. And it is so true. I think this Swami would tell us, you know, Swami, how to get that focus. And Swami will say, you have the focus to do all the wrong things.
Mm.
But then you want to come and ask me your focus and the ability and the
skill. No, really, we are able to sit for 2 hours at a stretch and watch a movie.
Right. No, 3 hours you can be locked up in a dark room when you're seeing a film. Right? Lockdown is fine then. But then when you're told to stay at home, then you kind of feel constrained.
Hislop says, that is very good. And Swami says, I mean, when Swami says everyone has self-confidence, Hislop says that is very good. And Swami says, yes, it is important. The self-confidence is already there. If there is the interest in the good things, the self-confidence is already there to carry them out. People go to America and charge various amounts for spiritual information, which belongs to everyone, but for which no charge should be made. The information should not be sold, and the Americans should not buy.
My God. Cannot get more clear than that, right?
Going ahead, I think after this interview gets over, I think this is a private interview between Hislop and Swami, because that's how the conversation seems to be going. Hislop says, Swami, in the description of the light meditation, I was not quite sure how Swami said that it had liberation as the result. And Swami says, you are the light. The same light is found in others also. The body drops away and you are the light. That is liberation. Does Swami mean that by means of light, one expands through the entire universe and is no longer limited by the body? Swami says, in quotes, that my falls away. There is no longer my. And then Hislop, you know, I think he's stating a point that we also would have got in our minds. Here is a meditation given by the Lord himself, and it takes one direct to liberation. Why would a person wish to bother with any other meditation? And Swami says, some sensory pleasure, some body result. And Hislop says, yesterday, Swami, people got the idea that any kind of meditation could be used at a center. And Swami says, don't worry about them. After a little while, they will feel how great this Jyoti meditation is and change to this. Do not force them. Give them some time. Look at Swami's love. Look at Swami's patience. Look at Swami's kshama. I think if we are able to inculcate even 1% of this, there will be so much more harmony, at least in the Satisai world.
Right, and so beautifully, you know, even when Hislop is saying that, why would anybody choose any other? He says, yeah, flaws are there. It's not like, you know, some sensory pullings are there, and some people, as rightly Swami said, you know, people have different interests. People have fancy different things. So in that sense, really, so sweetly and so beautifully Swami is saying, and you know, even as we are going through this, Hislop ends with that point by saying that, Swami, you ended the session so democratically that it appears like any meditation can be followed. And Swami says, don't worry, you know, they will understand it. And, you know, after so many decades, when we are reading through this, I think the message is so clear. And that's Swami saying that this is the best technique. I don't think any of us, between you and me or any of our listeners, got the idea that you can do any meditation. Yes, Swami is saying that you can do anything to reach me. But Swami is saying that this is the best, this is the simplest I'm giving you, and you know, you have come to me for this, that there is something that I can give you in your in your journey towards your goal.
You know, it's almost like Swami was in the physical. When Swami was in the physical, he's either in Vrindavan or Puttaparthi, and we come to Puttaparthi or Vrindavan to have darshan. At that point in time, if somebody had asked Swami, Swami, do we need to come to Puttaparthi or Vrindavan to see you? Can't we see in our homes? Swami would say, yeah, you can. But, you know, we know the difference in the experience. We know what it is when we come and meet him physically or even just see him physically. So that is definitely there. Theoretically, yes, you can reach God, you can get God in America also. But when physically the avatar has come for our sake to the earth, we should also, you know, he has come from God knows where to the earth. Having come thus far, I think we should also come till where he is there. When the avatar is there, that's why I'm saying when the physical form was there. So in the same way, if you ask Swami, any meditation is fine. No, it's only about focus. I can focus on a tree stump. I can focus on a speaker. I can focus on a movie actor. Yes, fine, you do it. But we are missing out so much because Swami is saying this is the easiest, this is the best, this is the sweetest, this is the most enjoyable path. If we want to do otherwise, Swami is democratic to say, yes, you can do it. But we should not mistake his democracy to think that all the paths will be equally good, all the paths will be equally supported. Definitely, if we follow what Swami says, I think in a way, implicitly, Swami is also bound to come and assist us because we are doing what he says.
There is this beautiful interaction that Dr. Shivashankar Sai, our former warden, was once narrating. I think Swami had sent him for some refresher course or on a visit to some university. He had gone and he had come back, and I think in Thrai Vrindavan, Swami, I don't know the exact details, Swami asked him to speak to the students, and he started narrating about Swami's omnipresence in all of these places and all of the experiences that he heard from devotees in different places. And, he was glorifying all of that. At the end of it, Swami told something which is actually a little different from what you hear from Swami. Swami said, all that is true. You know, Swami's presence is being present, is being felt everywhere. But Swami said, this is special. You know, this presence is very, very special. What you are all enjoying now, it is for a very limited time and is being given to a very limited people. This is not to say that the students sitting around Swami or those who had the physical opportunity had a very special, you know, they were very special devotees compared to the others. But anything that comes from that physical presence of Swami is a little more special than, you know, when you talk about wisdom. Wisdom is so vast. You know, for thousands of years, people have been meditating on God and people have been coming up with different yogas. They all may be valid and they all may have their own glory. But what comes from the physical frame of the avatar is special. Right? God may be anywhere. God may be found by any path. But the path that Swami speaks about definitely has much more value than anything else. And I think that is the lesson that Swami was conveying. Swami, the omnipresence is great, but the presence also has a value, and that is why he took the trouble to come down, as Swami said. In that sense, yes, every path is going to lead you to God. But when Swami speaks about a path, when Swami speaks about a technique, it has something more special in that, which probably cannot be expressed adequately.
On that note, dear listeners, we will conclude today's satsang. We will meet you again next week at the same time, and we will continue with this. I think we have covered almost 3/4 of the book. Another quarter is left. And as always, we will pray that we humbly receive the love and grace and insight that Bhagwan is showering through these conversations. If you have any thoughts, any ideas, anything at all that you wish to share, you can write to us at listener@radiosai.org. As always, we will go through them and try to incorporate them as soon as possible into any of our satsangs. Now we'll leave you with a song, on the other side of which you will be greeted by Brother Chandu with his segment Love to Love.
Antar jyot jalao సాయి అంతర జ్యోత జలాఓ సాయి
జలా సాయి